Okay, Psalm 121, please. I'd like to thank Nick and Kim for the tremendous privilege of teaching today. I'd like to title today's teaching God's 911, or 911 if you prefer. Who are you going to call? Ghostbusters? I'm going to call God. I don't know about you guys. I'm going to look at some disasters in the Bible. Who survived and why? And what can we learn? I'm going to share with you about how we can depend on God in an emergency situation. And it's not all Old Testament stuff. God's still in the business of helping people today and now. I'm specifically going to share with you about how God intervened in the lives of four people who escaped the inferno of 9/11. Okay. All we know we can count on God. When you're in trouble, you and I don't call on Ghostbusters, right? We call on God. How about God? We're looking at Psalms 121 first. You know, who am I depending on? Who do I trust in? I will lift up mine eyes unto the hills. From whence cometh my help? My help cometh from the Lord, which made heaven and the earth. That's my God. My God's the one that made the heaven and the earth. He will not suffer thy foot to be moved. He that keepeth thee, that's you and me, will not slumber. God's not taking a break, right? Behold, he that keepeth Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is thy keeper. The Lord is the shade upon thy right hand. The sun shall not smite thee by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord shall preserve thee from all evil. He shall preserve thy soul. The Lord shall preserve thy going out and thy coming in from this time forth and even forevermore. Also in Psalm 91, there's a lot of truth in the Bible about God being our shield and buckler, about God being our defense. And a lot of times in life, these are what you go to remind yourself. It's how you have that habit in your heart so that when an emergency situation does come, you are prepared, okay? Psalm 91, verses 1 through 8. He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, he is my refuge and my fortress, my God, in him I will trust. Surely he shall deliver thee from the snail of the fowler and from the noisome pestilence. He shall cover thee with his feathers, and under his wings shalt thou trust. His truth shall be thy shield and buckler. Thou shalt not be afraid for the terror by night, nor for the arrow that flieth by day, nor for the pestilence that walketh in darkness, nor for the destruction that wasteth at noonday. 1,000 shall fall by thy side, and 10,000 at thy right hand, but it shall not come by thee. Only with thine eyes shalt thou behold and see the reward of the wicked. Okay? And also, I'd like to, before we move on into this, just one more Proverbs in chapter 11. So we can see God has many promises in here to us personally of how he will help us, how he will preserve us. Proverbs 11:8. The righteous are delivered out of trouble, and the wicked come in his stead. Let's look at this. I'm at the wrong one. Sorry about that. Proverbs 11:8. The righteous is delivered out of trouble, and the wicked cometh in his stead. All right, Young's translation says of this verse, the righteous from distress is drawn out, and the wicked goeth in instead of him. Now, we certainly see this example plenty of times in the Old Testament. Noah in Genesis 6. You know, you see in this first disaster, only what, seven people in the whole world survived? All right, we see that there are men of renown. English supposes the word renown to mean good. Better would be famous. Famous is kind of neutral. You know, Jack the Ripper is famous. Jesus is famous, you know. So what kind of famous? That's the context. Verse 4 of Genesis 6. There were giants in the earth in those days. And also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown or famous men. Context, verse 5. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth. So not only were they mighty men of wickedness, they were, you know, their wickedness was very great as well. That the imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And he repented the Lord that he had made man on earth, and it grieved him in his heart. Of course, this is a figure of speech. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, and the creeping thing, and the fowls of the air, for it repented me that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. In our recent teaching, we learned that it wasn't so with Noah, that his thoughts weren't evil continually. That's why he found grace. All right? And we also see in Sodom. You know, here we have Abraham, right? He's bartering with God for, first you start off 50 righteous men in the city in Genesis 18. And, you know, will he spare the whole place for their sakes? And he barters down to Sodom for 10 men. Well, you know, the thought is, well, why not just barter for Abe's family, you know, for Lot's family? You know, that's definitely the heart of his concern. Then you got to consider, more than Lot moved there, what about all Lot's herdsmen and his servants? So that's why he started at 50, figured, well, certainly these guys stayed with Noah, you know, with Lot, his great example and all. Well, maybe, like I said, Abraham was concerned for Lot's friends and acquaintances. However, not even of all of Lot's family made it. His wife and his sons-in-laws didn't make it, you know. So you had that disaster. See, thoughts are evil continually, and the wickedness of man is very great. You can have a disaster where a lot of people perish and where just a few are saved. Lot is shown to be virtuous and the rest of the city not virtuous. And you can see this in Genesis 19. So we have this, this is continuing on in Genesis. We had this account in 18 with Abraham bartering to God for saving the men from Sodom. Here in Genesis 19, verse 1, and there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom, and Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. He was very nice toward the strangers, wasn't he? And he said, behold now, come, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet, and ye shall rise up early and go on your ways. And they said, nay, but we shall abide in the street all night. And he pressed upon them greatly. And they turned into him and entered into his house, and he made them a feast, and did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat. But before they lay down, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house all around, both old and young, all the people from every quarter. That's kind of the whole bunch of Sodom, wasn't it? Old and young, all the people from every quarter. And they called unto Lot and said unto him, Where are the men which came into thee this night? Bring them out unto us, that we may know them. And Lot went out at the door unto them, and shut the door after him, and said, I pray you, brethren, do not so wickedly. Behold, now I have two daughters which have not known man. Let me, I pray you, bring them out to you, and do ye to them as is good in your eyes. Only unto these men do nothing, for therefore came they under the shadow of my roof. And they, the men of Sodom, said, Stand back. And they said again, This one fellow came in to sojourn, and he needs be a judge. Now we will deal worse with thee than with them. So they're threatening Lot. And they pressed sore upon the man, even Lot, and came near to break the door. But the men, those angels, right, put forth their hand and pulled Lot into the house to them and shut the door. And so we know that Abraham and his daughters are successful in escaping that city. Okay, also we have a little bit here. You remember about how David escaped Saul's treachery. And you don't have to turn there, but in 1 Samuel 19:10 it says, And Saul sought to smite David even to the wall with the javelin, but he slipped away out of Saul's presence. And he smote the javelin into the wall, and David fled and escaped that night. So here you see there's lots of records in the Old Testament about people escaping from harm's way. And some of it real disaster harm. I mean, there's, to you, you know, maybe being in a situation, it's a big disaster, you know, but it's not a big disaster to anybody else. It maybe just involves you, like here with David and Saul. So we might want to wonder what Jesus has to say about disaster. So we can go to Luke chapter 1. You have here Jesus is talking about, they're having a discussion about this tower of Siloam that falls on people. And I guess it must have been a tragedy in their day. So here in Luke 13, verses 1 through 9, there were present at that season some that told him of the Galileans whose blood Pilate had mingled with their sacrifices. And Jesus answering said unto them, Suppose ye that those Galileans were sinners above all the Galileans because they suffered such things? I tell you, nay, but except ye repent, ye shall all likewise perish. Or those 18 upon whom the tower of Siloam fell and slew them, think ye that they were sinners above all men that dwelt in Jerusalem? I tell you, nay, no. But except you repent, you change your mind, you shall all likewise perish. So now he gives them a parable. So seeing the context of this parable, I think is pretty interesting. He spake also this parable. A certain man had a fig tree planted in his vineyard, and he came and sought fruit thereon and found none. Then he turned to the dresser of his vineyard. Behold, these 3 years I come seeking fruit in this fig tree and find none. Cut it down. Why cumbereth it the ground? And he answered and answering said unto him, Lord, let it alone this year also until I shall dig about it and dung it. And if it bear fruit, well. And if not, then after that thou shalt cut it down. You know, it reminds you of that figure of sloth, doesn't it? How about that one where Jesus Christ is talking about the talent and the servant who had just the one talent? He could have gave it to the lenders and at least gotten interest. Okay, when it comes to the Word of God in our lives, you can be crippled, you can be sick, you can be on your deathbed, but you can still what? You can still pray for people, you can still speak in tongues. That's like interest in the bank. There's always something you can do spiritual. You can, how much effort does that take? It's like putting interest in the bank. Then you can't be saying, said of you, you're just taking up space in the ground. You're just, you're not doing anything for God. I'm not saying this, in a condemnation sense. I'm just saying that we can have believing believers die in a disaster, and it begs the question. We've been dunged with doctrine, reproof, correction. Are we bearing any fruit? I'm just saying this as a concept we can think about when we think about disasters. Why do believing believers die? This is one thing. The slothful habits of your life, it might be some consequences. Are we just coasting on autopilot, expecting God to always deliver us? There are many stories of deliverance, and you can read about them on the internet. I think Reader's Digest has some wonderful stories about how people get delivered. And usually don't hear about these much from the news media. They focus on the dead and their struggles, right? You may have to hunt for some deliverance stories, but the stories are there, and they're always quite a blessing to read. Now, you might have seen the movie about the rescue of two firemen on 9/11 who credit God for saving their lives. They do. They credit God. And you may have read about that last person to be saved from the tower wreckage. They only got 20 people alive out of there. How she believed God to be saved. She prayed to God. She had her head in a couple, in some of the wreckage. And she told God that she wanted to be saved. Well, she was the last one out. What I'm going to read about is how the only people to escape from above the 78th floor of the South Tower, God had to help escape. God had to intervene. Only four escaped from above the 78th tower of the South Tower. I think there was nobody from the north, but four people got out from the south. And only four died from below that level. So you know that pretty much a lot of people were able to get out. Okay, one thing that's interesting is 20% of Americans know somebody who was hurt or killed. That's one out of five people. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? Before we hear this account, let's consider all these people, and there's so many of them. There's blogs out there. Give God credit for saving them. Directly, indirectly, some talk about prayer. But the blame first crowd, they're always blaming God. You hear people all the time, well, where was God in 9/11? Excuse me? I'll tell you. I'll show you where God was in 9/11. He was there. Lots of people he helped. First of all, consider that God prevented many people from even being in the towers that day. Many people. At 9 o'clock, some offices weren't even open yet. The tourist lookout tower was not open yet either. Some of the offices were under construction, and the residents were not even working in the building. Some of the offices weren't rented, so they were vacant. The previous day, there was a big lot layoff in the one big bond firm, Cantor Fitzgerald. They laid off on September 10th, 51 people. Cantor Fitzgerald. Now, they lost almost half of the people from the North Tower were Cantor Fitzgerald people. 658, 450, I'm sorry, 1401 people died in the tower. They laid off 51 people the day before. Consider. It was the first day of school. So many people drove their kids to school. Some people mention an accident that kept them from getting to work on time. Maybe some people just called in sick that day. It was a beautiful day. Gorgeous. I remember it. Perhaps some people might have just called in sick. My sister had a friend she was trying to reach, found out he'd been using his computer at home. How about people who were working at home that day, doing the computer thing? Some people who were there were not upstairs on their floor when the plane hit. It was one person's turn to get donuts. Another person forgot his laptop in a lower office. One person was getting exercise climbing up the escape steps. And one person went to the lobby to escort a visitor. In any event, the news media expected a death count of 6,000 at first. They got about, between all the things that happened on 9/11, 2,819, not even half. You know, when you think about it, our tragedies here in the United States are small. Think about it. Tens of thousands die in tsunamis, floods, earthquakes. Think about it. Bangladesh, China, Indian Ocean, North Korea. We hear thousands of people dying in their disasters. Is it just because of technology? How about consequences of rejecting the Messiah? You know, Israel suffered plenty on that one. You see, in Matthew 27, people cursed themselves and their children, and some died in Jerusalem and Masada. Certainly, our unbelief in the United States could reap us similar consequences. Once again, notice that when the plane hit the North Tower, nobody from above the area of impact survived. Why? In the South Towers, you can see that the plane swerved right before it hit. So one staircase was spared. Why? And why were there only four people who made it from above the 78th floor? You know, surely some believing believers may have died from among them. In fact, survivors who credit God for rescuing them, sometimes they're harassed by friends and relatives for being believing believers. So why didn't God rescue my brother? He was a Christian. You hear that. Let's not forget Luke 13. Maybe they weren't listening to God. They could have been fearful. You know, maybe they didn't have a spirit connection with God. You know, maybe they were just unfruitful. And we got to think about ourselves. In an emergency situation, are we looking at God, or are we just staring in disbelief that this can even be happening? You know, are we looking at God, or are we full of fear about what's happening right in front of us? These are bad habits. You know, everybody wrestles with them, but we can train our minds to right habits, and we can start producing good fruit if we've allowed our commitment to slip. And I think it's very interesting, of these four people that survived from the South Tower, two of them demonstrated commitment to God, and all four credit God for their escape. Okay, I'm going to read from the account, some of the accounts. Tuesday, September 11th, 2001, began for like any other day for Bethel Assembly of God deacon and Sunday school superintendent Stanley Pramuth of Elmont, Long Island. Little commitment there, okay? He got up early, took a shower, prayed, and got ready and headed for work. The drive was uneventful. The train ride was the same. Yet this day he would see the hand of God spare his life. For some particular reason, I gave God a little extra of myself that morning during prayer, Stanley said. I said, Lord, cover me and all my loved ones under your precious blood. Even though I said that and believed it, I said it over and over. What was this man's habit of life? Got to consider. When Stanley arrived at World Trade Center Tower 2, that's the South Tower, he took his elevator up to his office on the 81st floor. I work for the Fuji Bank Limited, he said. I'm assistant vice principal, I'm vice president in the loans operation department. The company is located on the 79th through the 82nd floor. Stanley greeted Delise, it's a young lady, a temporary secretary, who had arrived before him. After talking briefly, he headed over to his desk, and there retrieving my messages, I'm looking out at the next building, World Trade Center, the North Tower. And I saw fire falling through from the roof, Stanley said. Now, this entire building is surrounded by glass. And you can stand up, and from there you can see all the buildings, planes, and everything flying at the same altitude. As Stanley saw fireballs coming down, his first reaction was to think of his boss who works in that building. He decided to try and call him to see if he was okay. I'm dialing his number and getting no response. So I say to Delise, the temp, go, 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 let's get out. At this point, everybody's using common sense. Okay. Delise and Stanley got on the elevator, went down to the 78th floor. Some other people were there, the company president, the CEO, the human resources director, and two other gentlemen joined the group and headed down to the concourse level of 2 World Trade Center. If they had continued on and exited the building, all of their lives would have been spared. As it was, that is not the way it happened. As soon as we reached the concourse level, the security guard, stopped us and said, where are you going? Stanley explained about seeing the fire in Tower 1. According to Stanley, the guard said, oh, that was just an accident. 2 World Trade Center is secured. Go back to your office. That turned out to be fatal advice. Aside from Stanley and Delise, they were the only ones of that group to survive. We were joking. I told Human Resources Director Brian Thompson, this is a good time to think of relocating this building. It's not safe anymore. Well, you know, they had 93, they had a bomb incident in that tower too. Stanley headed back towards his office, but before he got there, he told Delise that with the events of the day, she should go home and relax. Thompson went to the 82nd floor, the president and CEO went to the 79th floor, and Stanley got out on the 81st. According to another account, Stanley admitted that he was peer pressured to return to his office. You know, he was going to leave, but his boss looked at him when he let Delise go, and he kind of felt condemned, so he went back up with them, okay? Only 4 people are going to make it out of the South Tower alive from above the 78th floor. Let's look at what's going on with one of the others at this point. The 3 other guys who make it from above the 79th floor are from the Euro Brokers firm. Brian Clark is a fire marshal for his floor. Okay. When Tower 1 was attacked, he could see the fireballs from his window. He put on his fire gear and began to help people evacuate until the announcement came on the loudspeaker for everyone to return to work. Well, I gotta wonder if Brian was doing his job. You know, apparently not his usual work, right? He saw all these people watching other people jumping from the other building. He consoles a freaked out co-worker and walks her to the ladies' room. Then he returns to his office. Ron DeFrancesco, one of the other people who are survivors, in his office as well. What's a common sense thing to do? The South Tower, the tower that you're in, went in an attack just a few years before. Everybody's calling to see if you're okay. Your people are watching the fire next door. What work is getting done? Wouldn't you just cut your losses and send everybody home? And another point I was thinking about, I don't know about you, no security guard tells my boss what to do, you know? So I'm going to go back to Stanley's account. Stanley's on the 81st floor. When he got to his office, his phone was ringing. It was from someone calling from Chicago to find out if I'm watching the news, he said. He told the caller that everything was fine, but everything wasn't fine, far from it. As Stanley was talking, he looked up, saw an airplane coming from right around the Statue of Liberty, flying straight for him. All I can see is this big gray plane with red letters on the wing and the tail, bearing down on me, said Stanley, but this thing is happening in slow motion. The plane appeared to be like 100 yards away. I said, Lord, you take control. I can't help myself here. You know, you got to think. Did he try to remember a verse? No. Did he pray at this point? No. He's going for God's open door policy, right? God's red phone, red line, okay? Psalm 118 says, let them now that fear the Lord say that his mercy endureth forever. I called upon the Lord in distress. The Lord answered me and set me in a large place. The Lord is on my side. I will not fear. The Lord is my strength and song has become my salvation. So Stanley called on God. He didn't call on Ghostbusters. Okay. He then dove under his desk. He's continuing. My testament, my Bible, is on top of my desk, explained Stanley. I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that the Lord was going to take care of me once I got there. As he curled into a fetal position under his desk, the plane tore into the side of the building and exploded. Miraculously, Stanley was unhurt, as was his Bible. However, he could see a flaming wing of the plane in the doorway of his department 20 yards away. He knew he needed to get out of the office and the building fast. But he was trapped under debris up to his shoulders. Lord, you take control. It's your problem now, he said. So here we're continuing on. He recalled praying, I don't know where I got the strength and power from, but the good Lord, he gave me so much strength and power in my body that I was able to shake everything off. I felt like I was the strongest man alive, buried up in debris to his shoulders, able to shake it off. How about Judges? We see that Samson killed 1,000 men with the jawbone of an ass. It's available today. Does God take care of people? You call God's 911, God's answering machine, right? He's there. He doesn't sleep. He doesn't slumber. He's there. Okay, all the time Stanley was asking the Lord to spare his life. I'm crying. I'm praying. Lord, I've got things to do. I want to see my family. Lord, help me through. Stanley's office resembled a battle zone. Walls flattened into dusty heaps. Office equipment strewn violently. Flames flickering about and rubble everywhere with live wires. Everything I'm trying to climb on to get out is collapsing and I'm going down, he said. I'm getting cuts and bruises. But I'm saying, Lord, I have to go home to my loved ones. I have to make it. You have to help me. Suddenly, Stanley saw the light of a flashlight. For a moment, it stunned him. What were the chances of someone bringing a flashlight to this floor? He thought, my first gut reaction was, this is my guardian angel. My Lord sent someone to save me. Stanley began screaming, I see the light! I see the light! But after clawing his way through the debris, he realized that he couldn't get out. All the exits were blocked, and his guardian angel couldn't get to him. A wall was between him and the staircase. His guardian angel was Brian Clark, we read about earlier. I'm going to pick up with Brian's account here. Brian was in his office when the plane hit. The building swayed violently. The ceiling's coming down. The walls are caving in, and debris and smoke is everywhere. Brian turns on his fireman's flashlight and heads out the door with 7 of his co-workers. All the 50 people that were on the east wall, I guess they went. He recounted, so we're going down the steps and we meet a heavy-set woman coming up from below who just was insistent and spread her arms and almost wouldn't let us go by. She said, stop, stop, You've got to go back. The floor below us is in flames and smoke. We've got to get above it. And we got into a debate. I had my flashlight, and I went from face to face. Whoever was talking, I shone the flashlight at them. I was not involved in the debate initially. Now, why would there be a debate? Maybe God's tapping on someone's shoulder. This is maybe not the thing to do, to go up. They may not know that the door upstairs to the roof is locked. They may not know that no helicopter can land because of the smoke. They may not know that there's no way for them to go, that the only way to escape is down. But somebody's telling someone that this is that they need to go down. So he says, I wasn't involved in the debate initially. I actually didn't even make a comment. And in the midst of the debate, I hear this banging and a voice calling, help, help, I'm buried. Is anyone there? Can anyone hear me? And miraculously, I'll say it that way. I concentrated on that voice as the others were deciding to go up. I grabbed Ron DeFrancesco, how about that, survivor number three, by the shoulder and said, come on, Ron, we've got to get this guy. We see that our survivors so far of men are men of action and believing. Two of them, by the way, are Sunday school teachers. I don't remember why I remembered that, but I think it's significant that they were men of action. Eventually, Ronnie was overcome with the smoke. He had been using a gym bag or his briefcase or something to cover his face, but it wasn't doing him any good. And I can remember seeing him sort of squint and crouch back low off the floor with an agonized look on his face. I was again miraculously in a bubble. I can remember squinting a little bit, but it was as if I had this bubble of clear air around me. How about God making a way for him to help this other guy? He could breathe air. I wasn't coughing at all, breathing normally, and the trapped man had been crying, help, help, I can't breathe. Stanley, the trapped man, continues. He can't get to me, and I can't get to him, and by this time I can't breathe. I don't know if it was sulfur or what, burning jet fuel perhaps, but I can smell this thing. I got down on my knees and said, Lord, you've got to help me. You've brought me this far. Help me get to the staircase. But then Stanley did something surprising. While praying on his knees, Stanley called out to the man behind the wall, there's one thing I got to know. Do you know Jesus? The man replied, I go to church every Sunday. Then they prayed together to enable them to break through the wall. I got up and felt as if a power came over me, said Stanley. I felt goosebumps all over my body and I'm trembling. I said to the wall, he spoke to the problem, you're going to be no match for me and my Lord. Moments later, he punched his way, karate chopped that wall, and with the help of the man on the other side, was able to squirm his way through a hole in the wall. Brian, the rescuer, said, I guess it took me 30 seconds to a minute to get most of the stuff away from the trapped person, until this last thing we couldn't move. That's when I encouraged him to do the jumping. I reached over the top and I looked at him and said, you must jump. You've got to jump out of there. He jumped once and I couldn't connect with him. He jumped again and I grabbed him. I pulled him up over the top and we fell like in a heap and hugged. And I remember that Stanley said about this, it felt like he was an angel. He had so much strength, he just pulled him up. I said, I'm Brian. And he said, I'm Stanley. And we made our way back to the stairs. Stanley said, the guy held me and embraced me and gave me a kiss and said, from today, you're my brother for life. But the danger wasn't over. Stanley had injuries, and the man who rescued him, Brian, was an older gentleman in his 60s with a heart condition. And they still had 81 floors to walk down. And, unbeknownst to them, the building was in danger of collapse. Brian continued, some of the firewall, or maybe had come down from the ceilings, I just don't know, had blown on the stairs. Sheets were lying or leaning up at an angle against the railing, so we had to move those. Some were lying on the stairs. Water seemed to be dribbling out somewhere, I don't know where, and making the stairs wet. And it was running sometimes in this drywall that was lying flat in the stairs, making it like a slide. So we had to be very careful. We were holding on to the railing, hand over hand, kind of going down these slippery areas because we were standing on slippery drywall. Somewhere around the 77th floor, the stairwell walls were cracked, and you could look through the crack and see flames. They just sat quietly licking up, not a roaring inferno. And there was some kind of smoke there, but again, I think the stairs were pressurized, pushing the air out, so we had less smoke in the stairway than you might imagine. Well, I imagine that God could hold back the fire, right? What about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the book of Daniel? Is that really so strange that he would do that for somebody else? Obviously, these men weren't fearful. Okay, on the way down, they meet this guy named Jose. And he's going back up because someone from this group of people that went upstairs was calling for help. So here's this guy, Jose, and he had been bringing people, injured people down from the 78th floor. And he was going back up, and this is a sad situation. They try and convince him to come on down with them. They say, look, you know, he's above here, and he could take care of himself. You know, we need to get out of here. Stanley noted, we hobbled down our way, and at every floor we stopped to see if anybody was there, but nobody was. But a man was on the floor in one place, and his back was gone, and he was covered in blood. Stanley asked if he could be allowed to carry the man out, but a security guard told them that it would be better to send somebody up. When they finally made it down to the building concourse, only the firefighters were there. They were saying, run, run, run. They were telling us to run out, but they were not concerned about themselves, he said. Stanley and Brian would have run from the building, but now the concourse was surrounded with fire. Wetting themselves under the building's sprinkling system, they held hands and ran through the flames to safety to Trinity Church, about two blocks away. I wanted to go to the church to thank God, Stanley explained. As soon as I held on to the gate of that church, the building, the World Trade Center Tower 2, the South Tower, collapsed. That's 51 minutes from time of impact, not even an hour. Stanley and Brian had made their way safely out of the danger area. Before they parted, Stanley had given his business card to Brian in hopes of contact at a later time. He said, if I don't see you, I'll see you in heaven. Now, I know you've been wondering what happened to survivor number 3, Ron DeFrancesco. He had been with Brian Clark to help him rescue Stanley, but was overcome with smoke. Brian remarked, as soon as we got to where Stanley was, Ron disappeared. He went back to the stairway, and I don't know what happened to him at that point. Trying to get fresh air, Ron believes he went up and reached into the high 80s staircase, or perhaps as high as the 91st floor. He's not exactly sure. When he turned around and went down a bit, he found others lying down on the stairwell. He laid down too. There were all kinds of people laying down. People were overcome with smoke, probably about 15 or so people on the landing in the stairwell. They had tried to open up various floors, but all the floors were the door. They couldn't get through the doors. They were at an angle or something where they couldn't open a one of them. Okay, so these people, about 15 of them, are sleeping on the stairwell. He said, suddenly I was panicked. I wanted to see my wife and kids again. I don't mean to sound like a Bible thumper, but it was miraculous. Someone lifted me up. Everyone else was starting to go to sleep. It was an aberration that I got up. I figured I had to go and get out. I got scary and edgy and claustrophobic and bolted for someplace out. It was a survival thing. I don't really know how to tell you. I'm grateful that I got out. It was a little bit of a miracle. It was a big miracle. Getting down was not easy at first. I had to break my way through some drywall and slide down through stairwells and go through some fire and stuff around the 78th floor. When he got to the 76th floor, it was clear. He was by himself. He ran the rest of the way. As he left the building, it was collapsing. He was the last man alive out of that building. A fireball blew him across the street, and he woke up 6 days later in a hospital. I'll bet you God wouldn't allow the building to collapse until he got out. Now Stanley goes home after he leaves the church. Cut and bloodied, with his clothes tattered and wearing a borrowed shirt, he finally made it home hours later to his wife and his two children. "I held my wife and my kids and we cried," says Stanley. After thanking God for sparing his life, Stanley told God that whatever he did, it would always be for his glory. I'm so sore, but every waking minute I say, "Lord, had you not been in control, I would not have made it." For some divine reason, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that the good Lord's mighty hand turned the plane a fraction from where I was standing, said Stanley, because when it crash landed, it was just 20 feet from me. I don't care who would rationalize, what people would say now or years from now, but I know it was the handiwork of the Lord that turned that plane. My Lord Jesus is bigger than the Trade Center, and his finger can push a plane aside. Now, Brian got home and contacted Stanley. It was a beginning of a great friendship. And one last thing I'd like to say before I leave this account. The fourth and only other person to survive above the 78th floor got godly intervention as well. He went down a different staircase, and when he couldn't go any further, it was blocked. He was forced to get off on the 78th floor. It was very smoky. It was littered with debris, covered with body, and was on fire in different places, very hot, and he couldn't find any exit. In the nick of time, someone wearing a bandana, it was supposed to have been Jose, opened the door to the only escape, stairwell A. "Is anybody alive in here?" Incidentally, 14 people got to safety off this floor. It was an elevator exchange floor. Okay, mostly because the man in the bandana kept coming back to help the survivors. He did not make it himself, but remember, Brian told him that he should get out, and he didn't. We don't know. Maybe God told him that it was time for him to leave, and he didn't listen. You can only guess. You don't know. And you know, even if something happened, we need to have the comfort that death is not the end for us. Even if we did die tragically, it's not the final straw. Like it says in 1 Corinthians 15, "So when this corruptible shall have put on incorruption, and when this mortal shall have put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is thy victory? The sting of death is sin, and the strength of sin is the law. But thanks be to God, which giveth us the victory through our Lord Jesus." We have comfort in knowing that this is not the end for us. Romans 8:36, it says, "As it is written, for thy sake we're killed all the day long, we're counted as sheep for the slaughter. Nay, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him that loved us. For I'm persuaded that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other creature shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord." You know, and the issue with death is, you know, we can't help others from beyond the grave. We got to do it here and now. That was Paul's answer when he thought about the matter. That's why the death of God's saint is costly in his eyes. So in summation, in any situation, tragedy or otherwise, we learn to look to God. We learn that the righteous were delivered out of trouble, and many times the wicked are in their place. In biblical disasters, God delivered the believers and the wicked died. Jesus Christ said, it's not necessarily people are evil if they die in a disaster, but beware of sloth. Don't just take up space. Okay. God rejectors blame 9/11, blame God for 9/11. However, the survivors credit God with saving them. Of the four survivors from the South Tower, we know at least two of them were men of action, believing in purpose and prayer. And we know that we could emulate that kind of behavior in any time of situation that we need God. He, of course, is going to be there for us. And thank you very much for this opportunity to teach.